Finance Committee will come to order. Members Moses, Holm, Kelly, Wyrock, Hocker.
The name would be Hocker.
Hocker and Vice Chair Stoltz sitting in temporarily. Quorum on the calendar date is House Bill 88, Offenses by Minors Against Teachers. It's a short title, but I thought it was more comprehensive than that. This is the governor's bill. Is Mr. Roraro here today? Anybody from the administration? Anybody claiming parentage of this bill here today?
Steve. Chair, my name is Steve Weaver with the Department of Health. Can you not know that? Should be on the line to testify?
Let you sit down in
the chair.
The talking is one of the
I'm sorry. Through the chair, my name is Steve Weaver, and I'm with the Alaska Department of Law. John Novak was prepared to testify. I can go retrieve Mr. Roraro if you need him.
I know there were questions the previous meeting, and I think some of the folks raised the questions are here. We had a couple of them. If Representative Croft is out there listening, he's certainly invited to join us because he raised the concerns and possible amendments. Let's see if there's any questions from the committee with this. We're continuing on and we can direct traffic to Mr. Novak.
Move it out whenever you want to.
I would like to see Ms. Como is here from the Olympic School District. That was closed public testimony, but I'd sure like to ask her a couple of questions. Since she's traveled here, get the Anchorage School District a chance to get on the record. I'll get the chair right off the floor. I'm trying to drag this out.
Thank you very much. I'm Carol Como, the superintendent in Anchorage, and I had called in last week and then I had to leave when you didn't get to the bill. So basically, I just want to speak to the, I'm not prepared to talk about the section that he was talking about. I really want to echo our support for this bill as far as adults assaulting school district employees in the line of duty, when they're working at a school, in a school building, at a bus stop, if they're trying to assist children getting on and an adult assaults them, this is why we feel this is very important, based on some very disagreeable events that have occurred in the district in the last 2 or 3 years, when teachers were in their classroom teaching and an adult would become very aggressive, come in, hit them. In one case was with a telephone that was pulled it off the wall and hit the teacher right in front of a class of third graders. And we had 2 other examples. And we just feel there need to be sanctions in statute that we can then ensure that there's some jail time for people who act in this manner.
Ms. Carmel, those 3 offenses that took place, what was the disposition of those? Do you recall?
Well, in the one instance I was talking about, with the help of the Anchorage Police Department and the Municipal Attorney's Office, we all testified together in court that we felt there had to be some jail time. And so in that case, she got 90 days, and it was a first offense. The other one, there was a teacher at another school in the district that, again, was assaulted right in front of the class. That parent got 30 days jail time. And I can't remember the third one, what the sanction was, but it's just something we feel a school district employee should be safe in what they're doing in front of, especially when it's in front of students.
Ms. Tomo, before I have to give the gavel here, presumably those were first-time offenders. Do you think they were? They probably got it. Do you think they got the level of punishment that the average first-time offender for a violent offense has gotten?
You know, I don't know because I don't have experience dealing with other first-time offenders. I just know that the court was very supportive of the fact that schools should be safe places for teaching and learning, and so they support us. What they do with other first-time offenders who assault people, I don't know. I don't know what those sanctions are.
Mr. Chairman, if I might continue this?
Yes, please do. You're doing great.
I guess I'll ask this a little less clumsily than of those three, do you think the punishment they received was commensurate with their offense from the acted as a deterrent and the proposal?
No, I would have preferred a longer sentence because I believe they were totally out of control. But I don't know what the courts use or what you know attorneys use for applying sanctions in a graduated basis on people who assault other people. I truly don't know what the norm is for sure. Sanctions.
But if I might, if 90 days was insufficient, whatever level of amount of suspended or I'm not familiar with the sentences. Do you have a ballpark figure in mind how much time someone should get?
No, I would defer to the Department of Law for that. 90 days was, we felt, significant. And I will tell you that when the mother left jail, she came back and we had trespassed her, so she couldn't come onto the school grounds for a year without specific permission of the principal. And it truly has turned her behavior around, and now we don't have restrictions on her, and she's working very cooperatively with the school, whereas before it had been very contentious.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm kind of confused. You said before you said it was the sentence was inadequate.
No, the 30-day one I felt was inadequate.
So, Mr. Chairman, so 90 days? Are you looking at that again?
I don't have the number.
Less than 5 years. We're going to be proposed with certain levels of sentences, and I want to know what the hopes of the school district are established.
We truly don't have a position on that, and I really would defer to the Department of Law to come up with a recommendation based on their experience with other kinds of assault cases, what they felt would be a fair amount of time.
More than 30 days, though, is that a guide?
That would be my request.
In all cases?
Yes.
We did make some progress, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Stoltz. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
No.
Superintendent Como? Okay. Thank you for joining us. Was there anybody else who wanted to testify or have any comments on this particular bill? I understand that we're having some teleconference problems, and unfortunately our Department of Law is a teleconference, so I believe we are in the process of trying to find somebody else here in the Capitol who can represent law on some of the concerns Representative Croft had last time. I think we have somebody from Department of Law. Okay.
I have a question
for law. Okay. Randy, would you like to join us?
Yeah, sure.
Let's see, we had Steve Weaver. Did he testify? Okay. Did he testify?
He testified, but he didn't want to testify. Those were the questions.
Okay, very good. Well, Randy's here. He'll answer the Department of Law questions. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Randy Ruaro. I'm an attorney with the legislation and regulation section. I'm trying to help out the criminal division a bit. They've got a few people absent. But I believe there was a DA. I don't know if he made it on the line on the bridge. If not, I can try to answer the question.
We don't have any teleconference.
Oh, you don't? Okay. Well, I guess my understanding of where we left off was there was a discussion of including the, I think it's sub 3 on the second degree weapons offenses as an auto waiver offense. And I did talk to the DA's office, and they confirmed a couple things for me. One is that provision is intended for events like recently occurred at the mall in Anchorage where there was a shooting at the mall, and then there was a type of retaliatory shooting, you know, 2 days later at one of the suspect's house. It is used, they do use their discretion. It will not be applied to cases, that aren't, I guess, deemed reviewed by the prosecutor's office and deemed to be worthy of a second degree charge. The other point I guess I wanted to make is in the committee members' packets should be a letter from District Attorney Bob Linton, who explained at the judiciary level as well that the offense should be an auto waiver offense because getting a discretionary waiver is virtually impossible for a juvenile. They've tried it in 4 murder cases and were only successful in 1. They were denied in 3 others.
Any Rusty Weiler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are there federal laws that would do this, that already do what this state law would purport to do? In other words, could somebody be prosecuted under an identical federal provision?
Through the chair, Representative Weirach, I think there is, I guess the answer would be it depends. If the shooting occurred or event occurred at a school ground, I believe there is a federal law that would apply in that case, but I'm not aware of a federal general drive-by shooting or shooting of property law. I'm just not aware of that. Doesn't mean it's not there. Like I say, I'm not entirely familiar with federal criminal law, but I do know there's one for school grounds. I do not know if there's anything else, but I kind of doubt that there is.
At some point when you get back and you ask the criminal division folks if there is a similar provision in federal law that if somebody were charged, they could be charged under identical federal provision?
Through the chair, Representative Weirach, I will do that.
Randy, I noticed Mr. Canelli's here. Would he be able to help you on the criminal side? I don't know how you're split up, so... You want some support? We can bring
them
up.
Well, I guess, are there any other questions?
Okay. Representative Stoltz has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Ferraro. Thank you for coming down. The letter from the Department of Law, that's a no-brainer. And that's, I think, what Representative Croft and I were both asking, is that the unintended consequences aspect for simply possessing a firearm in certain circumstances. And I don't want to speak for Representative Croft, but I think he captured some of my concerns in that there are circumstances that are certainly much more benign, if not even innocent, possession of weapons without, you know, certainly the forgetting that you have a shotgun from a duck hunting trip, and not throwing that status of offense of this statute, a violation of this statute, the same category as these certainly very egregious examples. I mean, I have no problem agreeing that these ought to be automatic waivers. That's not the point. I would have also liked to have seen some of the flip side of cases that might also be waived where there's from a juvenile status when. Yeah. And how much discretion there is, and I guess I just want to get my comfort level, and pardon me for referring to you, but I was just trying to bring up the record that we both expressed concerns.
Speak for me anytime, Mr. Stoltz.
Well, don't be so free of
that. Go ahead, Mr.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I think I can follow up with 2 points. One is, I think the only type of possession offense that would fall under second degree is for a person who's been previously adjudicated a delinquent for an act that would have constituted a felony, and then they possess a weapon on school grounds or near a daycare. I'm going from memory there, but I think that's the only type of possession offense that would qualify for the second degree. And on the waiver issue, again, I wish I had my numbers in front of me, but when I looked at it, I think there were approximately only 4 to 6 successful waiver, discretionary waiver cases a year, so it's pretty rare, to get one. I'm assuming when they do get one, it really deserves, you know, to be waived.
Follow up, Representative Stoltz?
No, thank you. Well, I guess I'll only follow up, and I guess just for what it's worth, I guess put it on the record what the intent is.
Sure.
There's probably some use to that, if you give a little bit. But I appreciate the indulgence.
Okay. Here. Any other questions for Mr. Burrow?
Well, I guess I do. May I, Mr.
Sure, go ahead, Representative Croft.
I agree and will freely speak for Representative Stoltz. I think, why are some of the murder cases here not within the unclassified felony? Murder is an unclassified felony, and it, or a Class A felony that's a felony against a person under weird situation, why weren't any of these three automatic waivers?
Through the chair, Representative Kropp, I apologize. My knowledge of the juvenile code is a bit limited, more so than Ms. Carpinetti.
RB was a 14-year-old actor who participated in the murder of Rachel Pierce. It seems to me that I would be more interested in aspects of changing of the statute that would pull in the murder cases and not the target practice cases. You know, right now we're making it an automatic waiver if somebody shoots a firearm at or in the direction of a dwelling, even if that dwelling is empty. And gosh, you know, we end up incriminating ourselves on the record here, but on Montague Island, shooting towards, in the direction of, with the whole family here, we knew it was gone, target practice against shells, but that was in the direction of the Forest Service cabin, we were saying it, which was clearly a dwelling. I mean, you know, I would rather talk about how we automatically waive in murderers than how we automatically waive in people who engage in target practice.
Through the chair, Representative Kropp, I understand your concern, and I can only, again, I guess, point to the fact that the prosecutors, in their standard exercise of discretion, wouldn't be filing the auto waiver cases against a target shooter. I'm assuming that they would exercise their discretion unless it was an egregious case. That auto waiver issue will never, you know, it'll never come up. It'll be filtered out at the beginning in the prosecutor's discretion.
You know, I'd like to bring up Ms. Cunningham, because I know she's been looking at this bill on my behalf, and she was shaking her head over there. So
she also told me the answer while we were doing this. So she can do it or I can, but I should have seen it.
Ms. Cunningham, for the record.
For the record, Suzanne Cunningham, staff to Chairman Meyer. Under current law, the auto waiver provision only applies when a minor who is at least 16 years of age. The four examples that were provided by the Department of Law, all of the individuals were under the age of 16, so that's why they were not automatically waived.
Yeah, now that finding, Mr. Chairman, makes sense to me. I mean, we made a policy decision on the 16-year-old breakpoint. You could rationally talk about that or not. But that's why because I scared these were such brutal circumstances, it couldn't be that they were inappropriate for, but that's why they didn't fall under the automatic waiver. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Cunningham, any other questions? Okay, Ms. Cunningham, where are we on this? Were there amendments proposed last time? And we didn't take any action on them, or?
Mr. Chairman, the Y version of the CS was adopted at the last meeting. One amendment was adopted by, I believe it was proposed by Representative Weibrock, I believe, to delete Section 2, which is the findings and intent. Representative Croft proposed the second amendment. It was objected to, and it was withdrawn.
Okay. Maybe could you tell us what the amendment was that either Representative Weirach or Stokes or Hawker made? We're not sure.
Who? Mr. Chairman,
delete the intent
language.
Delete the intent.
It's my amendment. I deleted Section 2.
Section 2. Okay. Representative Stokes' amendment. And it's the delete Section 2. All right. Good. Okay. So that's all the modification we made to this bill. Is there any other amendments or deletions, suggestions? Representative Croft.
I would move again that we delete on page 3, line 30, that line, which is the most problematic for me. It has the situation that I've been talking about. I mean, again, this is a very serious area, automatic waiver. We've up to now defined the most serious categories of crime. I guess I'm not opposed to the way that Section 4 is careful about targeting specific bad conduct with guns. But this Section B, 1161-195, is some of the more well, is not narrowly tailored to this point and gets in target practice and a bunch of other things. And I think comes close to make just, well, maybe it's my own predilection, but to making a pejorative on guns themselves rather than on the conduct. And I'm glad some of the findings as well were taken out for that reason. But I think if you take out line 30 and leave the rest, you have a bill that still retains its focus on some of the worst conduct for automatic waiver.
Okay, I'll object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Rural or Ms. Cunningham, maybe you can explain to us what that does if we take out line 30.
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, if you were to take out line 30, you would be deleting from coverage of the auto waiver provision the crime of possessing a gun at a drug deal. You would be deleting from the auto waiver provision the crime of being previously convicted, found to be a delinquent of a felony crime, and then after that possessing a gun on school grounds or at a daycare. And you would, in the last instance, be deleting the provision that Representative Cross been concerned about, which is shooting at a building. I guess, you know, our position is we'd oppose the amendment. We think those offenses are serious, and that the prosecutors in the target shooting instance don't see them exercising their discretion to put to auto waive a 16-year-old who was target shooting, you know, rather than shooting into a mall or a building.
Interesting. Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chair, as I've looked at that after our previous session at length, it seems there may be a little bit of, I guess, just some of the concerns raised on the substance of statute AS 1161-195. You know, you keep bringing up the dwelling issue. Well, is it an inhabited dwelling? Is it an abandoned dwelling? Is it a currently inhabited dwelling? Or is it it seems like if we have a problem, maybe we ought to look at, not in this bill, but in some other legislative process, looking at a cleanup up to statute 1161-195, but rather than because of a potential possible flaw in that current statute, I'm not so sure we want to exclude that whole category from the intent of this particular bill. So I would be in opposition to this amendment for that reason.
Thank you, Richard Hawker. I was having the same concern that perhaps we should fix that statute, but not necessarily pass this amendment to do that.
I had a question, Mr.
Is
there a particular crime that was not, that we could not prosecute as a state, that we would have been able to prosecute if line 30 had been in existence? Are we sweeping something in? Is there some remedial action we're taking here to prosecute someone that that otherwise wasn't prosecuted?
Well, through the chair, Representative Weirach, I guess the purpose of the auto waiver provision is to allow for the certain serious offenses, you know, to be brought into the adult system. So the difference would be between, you know, prosecuting as a juvenile, where jurisdiction ends, I think, at age 19, to actually having them in the adult system. One last, if I could, just on the second degree, the provision that Representative Croft was concerned about being applied in a target shooting case, prosecutor from Anchorage advised me that provision is aimed at events like retaliatory shootings that recently occurred in Anchorage, where the suspect in the shooting at the mall, there were some retaliatory action and there were shots fired at the house, and that's where, you know, where that provision would be applied, not to a target shooting instance.
Oh, Representative Warren? Okay, Representative Croft.
This bill does a lot of good. I like the aggravators section, particularly section 3 on aggravating a crime for doing it on school property, school bus, school ground. Section 4 on clearing up the problem with people using multiple mitigators. But there, this other section, it was particularly apparent in the findings and then in this section, they listed a finding as a problem that 29% of male students in the state responding to the survey reported carrying a weapon, like that was a bad thing. They, you know, this is in their findings of how much of a problem they have. A lot of our students who've carried a weapon have carried them for honest hunting or other purposes. We still are one of the few states, and may be the only state now, where the naturally occurring sales of long guns, rifles, shotguns, is more than pistols. We use our weapons for generally in what they were originally intended for. We use them both for defense, but for hunting and protection out in the field. And there's a premise in this bill that is just offensive to me as an Alaskan gun owner. What is wrong with 29.8% of male students carrying a weapon, having reported carried a weapon? And that's this provision. You know, when you go back to prosecutorial discretion, and we're going to write laws that we know criminalize things that we don't intend to, but rely on the prosecutors to not charge in those areas, we're writing sloppy laws. And occasionally, prosecutors go beyond what they should. Some of us in this room have experienced that. I mean, the idea that you'll only charge a gun crime, that we'll write a law that allows much more than we thought, and we just rely on somebody having the discretion not to do that, is us not doing our job very well. I know Representative Foster doesn't like me to refer to him, but there was, a case of that in Nome where the prosecutor should never have charged that. And he had to go through an entire trial to prove that it wasn't what they were saying. So there's two persons culpable there, the prosecutor that charged it and the person that wrote a law that was incapable of that broad criminalization of otherwise lawful possession of firearms. So this bill does a lot of good. Let me just refer to one section that got fixed in judiciary. But if there's this instinct that we have to pass it the way that it was originally proposed to us, that's wrong. If you look at sub 2, it took me a long time to figure out what that extra language did. That's the shooting from a vehicle. And it says, that original 190A2 said, if you shoot from a vehicle with reckless disregard of danger to a person or property. Well, judiciary stared at that for a while and realized, every person who shoots at a sign in this state is going to get caught under that. There's not going to be any, you know, in some sections, students, you can hardly see a sign without some bullet holes on it. But do you, and maybe it's probably wrong, shouldn't do it, should it be automatically waived? Because that's reckless damage to property. And it is our job, just as it was judiciary, to take a look at these things and not pass out something because it was the way it was originally said, or because we like other parts of the bill. I like the other parts of the bill. I like, with the judiciary corrections, 4A. But I do not like all the ways that we criminalize gun-related conduct in the B section. I did not like and appreciate Representative Stoltz taking it out, the inference that was made from the findings that there is something inherently wrong with minors having guns. The uses, I, as a minor, used a gun in the right way. Hope that my children do and extend to teach them that. But there's a subtext to this entire bill that is offensive to me as an Alaskan gun owner. And I do believe if we keep this section in, we're going to be overriding. We've almost admitted it here today. We are including conduct that we don't really want. We should not do that. And to the extent somebody's saying we should rewrite 195, well, great. When you rewrite it, Representative Hawker, and you got it right, then include it as an automatic adult waiver, not before. Take it out now, fix it if you want, and then if you're comfortable with how it's fixed, use it as an adult waiver, not before. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Thank you for... I think... some of your bias and or some of your concern about bias of the tone of the bill has been taken care of in section 2. So we are focused then on the second amendment, which is taking out letter B.
Second Amendment is the problem.
Representative Schnolf and Representative Rockman.
Yeah, and I think I somewhat agree as far as A of Section 2, talking about the 29.8% of male students. Personally, I agree that one of the concerns is more is B, which is 11.8%. That one was the concern.
Representative Ward.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this was discussed at all in Judiciary, Mr. Toronto. This aspect, and maybe was you can opine on that. I did note that the 29.8% came from the state of Alaska, Alaska Youth Risk Behavior Survey in 2003 on page 8, and it really doesn't give a context for the data collection that girls and boys reported carrying a weapon that doesn't have an offensive sense, a defensive sense, as part of a gang. You know, because I do relate to what Representative Stoltz said, and that is I've had shotguns in my trunk because I'm going to go out duck hunting after school, actually pheasant hunting. And I do sympathize, I think, a little bit with the intent of the amendment by removing line 30, that in these kind of actions where you're reintroducing a new set of criminal penalties, there can be significant unintended consequences in that it as opposed to a remedial action where we want to bring this in because we did not sweep in where we wanted to because our laws did not address it. It probably has a better basis with me to adopt it as opposed to bringing it in whole cloth. And so I just, those are just my concerns, but I did wonder if Judiciary discussed any of this.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, maybe I can put some context back into the debate. There are approximately 8 cases a year on average where these types of charges are brought against juveniles, and they are the worst of the worst. These are not target shooters or anything near that. Possessing a gun at a drug deal, being previously convicted of a serious crime and possessing a gun at a daycare or a school, and then the retaliatory or dangerous type shootings into a building, all seem, you know, given the low number of cases a year and the types of crimes that are actually within the scope, I think that, I would urge the committee to vote no on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a different wrinkle on this. You said possession of a gun during a drug deal. Let's hypothesize here that what if I were a hunter and I went out hunting on the weekend, and then I came back and, God forbid, I sold a bag of dope to my classmate, which is granted the wrong thing to do, but the gun had nothing to do with it, but it just happened to be in my car. Does that follow the auto waiver?
Through the chair, Representative Holm, it may technically fall within the provision, but again, the prosecutor has complete discretion on whether to charge that as an auto waiver offense, whether to charge it at all, or charge it as a minor drug offense, I would assume, and they exercise that discretion on a daily basis. I think they handle 10,000 felony cases a year and about 30,000 misdemeanors. So they are exercising their discretion daily on what to charge.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking of that discretion, does it ever happen that a prosecutor may overcharge, just add on more charges than they ever anticipate taking to trial to scare the defendant into pleading out? I mean, is that a possibility?
Through the chair, I would
leave this tool out there.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I would say it is a possibility and probably does occur in some cases, but there's subsequent filters that are built into the system, such as the discovery process where the facts are brought out, the grand jury process, you know, where the decision's made to indict. So there's the jury, whether to convict, and then the judge on how to fashion a sentence. So there's, you know, several filters built in the system after the prosecutor exercises his discretion. So by the time you make it through all of those, presumably, you know, things have been, you know, the punishment will fit the crime at that point.
Thank you. Any other Representative Crop?
We'll just very briefly wrap up.
Okay, go ahead, wrap up.
What we're leaving in, we've already discussed enough why I think that section ought to be out. We're leaving in any section 190A1 says, uses or attempts to use a firearm during the commission of these offenses, which are the drug all the drug related. So it uses or attempts to use a firearm and a drug related. And what we've left in A2 is the drive-bys. Motor vehicle, and you shoot with reckless disregard that you might hurt someone. So the ideas that have been prevalent here, children using guns in drug crimes, children using guns in drive-by, remain. They're not affected by this taking out of this provision.
All right, Representative Kelly.
Could we hear your response to that?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I guess I would tend to disagree because the things that are covered in 195 include possession of a gun at a drug deal, and they include possessing a gun after being convicted of a serious crime at a school, and they include, you know, the retaliatory type drive-by shooting, whether or not a person happens to be in the house at the time the bullet comes through the window. That's what they include. So I guess I would disagree and understand there is some commonality between the two, but they are the provisions do cover distinct types of crimes.
Any other questions on 192?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm one of those guys that put the gun in when I was in high school and college at the beginning of grouse season and took it out at the end of moose season. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes was on the back seat, sometimes in the trunk, probably still guilty of that to some extent. So somebody stumbling into this is what bothers me. And it wouldn't bother me if the 2A hadn't sent the signal, or the one that we removed, the intent language, hadn't sent the signal that we were dealing here probably with a person who doesn't understand guns as a positive force in any way, shape, or form. So I'm suspect of the document when we open it up with signals that we've got an anti-gun owner at the helm. So I would like to understand that the little vignettes, the little stories we've given in here about how people carry guns that could get into an accidental situation is not a real problem. And I guess we're not going to get there.
Any other questions or comments? Mr. Rohrer.
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I guess the I probably didn't explain it very well, but the system of filters that are set up for those types of situations, there's several in a row that would have to be gotten around before you would ever have a conviction and punishment for that type of situation, and it starts, you know, first with the process, you know, actually the police deciding to investigate and arrest someone, and then the prosecutor deciding that the situation fit should be charged to that level, the grand jury agreeing that they should be indicted at that level, the jury agreeing that they should be convicted at that level, and then the judge finally sentencing, you know, exercising his discretion to sentence at that level. So that there's a whole system of fallbacks and filters in place. To where the you know, the unintentional person, I have a hard time envisioning ending up, you know, at the end of it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I guess I'm strange in that regard. The very first thing where the citizen had to put up with even the first thing, not the fact that they didn't finally get, you know, mm-hmm. So severely
punished in the end. I don't like any of the process. I don't like the cop having the right to impound the car and take pull the kid off while somebody decides whether they're going to proceed in this one. I don't even like the first one, and yet I also have no use for a system of laws that wouldn't protect us against the drug dealer that you're trying. I'm not at all offended by our attempt to protect, but I am offended by laws actually getting accidentally written at 3 o'clock on an afternoon because people can't quite get a way around it, making it so that event doesn't happen. We went through the same thing when I was on the Board of Regents with after the Sophie Sergi murder up there. And everybody was all interested in getting Sophie's killer, but a whole bunch of grouse hunters and moose hunters and guys that carry and gals that carry guns were very nervous because there was an East Coast liberal running the campus who didn't have any use for guns whatsoever, and we didn't trust anything that she was about at that point in time. Some of us, others thought it was great. And that's a very loose use of the word liberal that wouldn't refer to any of my minority friends here. But I just have that problem with it. It isn't that we would finally save this person this at the end of the chain, as you described. It's that you couldn't impound the car and grab him out and wake his dad up at 10 o'clock at night because a gun was found. That's where I'm coming from. So I guess the thing that bothers me about this is if I vote to take that language out, am I harming someone? And Representative through the Chair Croft had indicated that it's already covered. And you said no, it isn't.
Through the Chair, Representative Kelly, that the drug deal situation is covered, in the A1 section, I guess, if they actually use it, if they actually shoot someone, but the other section covers possessing a gun at a drug deal, and that the message that's to be sent by that provision, it's a bad idea. Don't drugs and guns don't mix, I guess, is what the deterrent message is that's being sent by that provision. And hopefully, if you can deter someone from ever bringing the gun in the first place, they won't have the opportunity to use it at a drug deal. So that's an important message, I guess, from that second provision that would be deleted under the amendment. And the other message that's sent is if you've been convicted of a felony or a serious crime and adjudicated a delinquent, it's not a good idea to carry a gun at school or daycare. And so I think that's an important message to send as well. And then the third message is the don't shoot it. If you're angry at another teen or another person, going to their house and shooting at it when they're inside, or you may not know whether they're inside, is a serious crime, and probably may be a little more serious because you may not know who's inside. It could be the person you're after who's an adult, or it could be an 18-month-old baby. So the message is, don't do that. And I guess the
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? I'm assuming that the co-chair asserts his objection to the amendment, so we'll have a roll call.
Strikes 130, page 2.
Yeah, why don't the clerk read the amendment?
Everybody have that in front of them.
Representative Croft?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Hawker?
No.
Representative Holm?
Yes.
Representative Jewell?
Yes.
Representative Kelly?
Yes.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
Yes.
Representative Lyra?
Yes.
Back to home,
yes.
8 in favor, 1 opposed.
So the amendment passes. Are there other amendments to CS for House Bill 88? Finance amended. I do have, before we go, I want to ask Mr. Roro, do you think the short title reflects the content of the bill? Just of it?
Well, it's Mr. Chairman, it's a, you know, the bill has changed somewhat, so I'm not sure that it does. Yeah. And
I don't know what the process is, but I sure like the original version. Okay. I just, I guess we can communicate to the to our LAA division, because the press uses the short title to shorthand the bill. So staff can make that note if there's no objection from the committee. So, Representative Foster.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move out. HPA committee has amended the test fiscal with individual entities.
Are there any objections? Discussion?
I'll object just for discussion. Just to instruct a newbie, did the result of your discussion on the title, what was the result of your discussion on the title, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kelly, I guess the committee instructed staff to let LAA know that we want the new title to be, the short title to reflect the contents more clearly.
Withdrawn.
The amended version.
Thank you, and I withdraw my objection.
Staff has nodded on that. Are there objections to maintaining moving the bill out of committee? Hearing none, House Bill 88 Finance amended is with attached fiscal notes is moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, actually, could we back up? I did want to object.
Okay, well, back up and.
I'm going to object, and then I'm going to remove my objection, because I think in these kind of situations where you're creating a new crime, you're going to have prosecutorial time, you're going to have people ending up in jail, you're going to have public defender time. To me, it just says it's going to cost the state money. And to have a zero fiscal note on these things just belies the reality. And I understand we've talked about that before, but that's my concern on these bills. To withdraw my objection.
No, Mr. Chairman, I'll object.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you. When bills get referred to the finance committee, it's because they have some sort of a fiscal note.
Right.
That's good. You know, what it is. And
if it's zero,
it makes me wonder why it was even referred to us. Unless there's truth in budgeting that comes to this committee, then maybe we're supposed to determine that. But I kind of the same thing.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess, just to maintain my objection for the purpose of discussion, I don't know how to resolve that, frankly. I mean, I'm not going to propose an amendment. What do I do? Propose an amendment to a fiscal note? It just doesn't work. So,
I believe Representative Holm had a question.
Yeah, I'm going to object just for a moment, then I'll probably remove my objection, but maybe I won't. Why can't we put an indeterminate fiscal note on? What stops us from doing that at our process? I guess I need the because if my good friend from Juneau is correct here, it is our duty to do that at this body, at this position. And I think Representative Jewell is actually right. You know, if we get it to us and there's no reason for us to be here, then we should probably just put one on it. And I don't know what big a deal that is, but it's just says that we do recognize that there may be some additional costs because of this.
So, Representative Holm, is that a motion to have the Finance Committee adopt an indeterminate fiscal note?
Sounds good to me.
Is there any objection to Representative Holm's oral motion?
Well, I object for purposes of discussion, and this is something that maybe someone who's been here longer than I am can comment on. What does an indeterminate fiscal note mean?
Representative Croft, is it a statement of frustration?
No, I think it's fine.
No, is that what it means?
Right. I think it means we know it's going to cost more money and it's impossible to determine how much. So it's at least an acknowledgement that it has a fiscal cost, but when you try and, you know, it's so hard to estimate. I mean, I think this aggravator clearly is going to cost us some money, and it's money well spent to increase a sentence for people to do these crimes on school grounds. But it's going to cost money somewhere in the correction budget. I can't believe that it will never be used, and if used, it'll mean more prison time. That's the point of it. And I guess there was some discussion earlier on, Representative Weirach, on whether the automatic waiver really cost you very much money in the sense of you've got a juvenile process. It may transfer it between HESA and courts or law or whatever. But I think at least the corrections, and at least if for no other reason than Section 3, it's got an indeterminate. And the only real impact of an indeterminate fiscal note is it sends it to finance, and since we're about to kick it out of finance, I'm not really sure that it's going to have any deleterious effect on the bill.
It will go somewhere else after. Representative Hawker.
Sorry. Mr. Chair. As this discussion is going to be on the record regarding what is intended by an indeterminate fiscal note, I would offer that rather than the definition being that there will in fact be some increase in cost that we can't quantify, I would much prefer that intent be in the line of there may or may not, depending on circumstances, be an increase, and that it is just as equally difficult to determine an amount that may or may not be incurred. And it's a subtle difference, but I think it's important to say we may or may not be incurring an increase.
Is that a friendly conceptual amendment to Representative Holmes' motion?
Just an item I'd like to see it on the record. I think that defines an indeterminate fiscal note, sir.
Is that fine? Mr.
Chairman, I guess I have a question. There's several fiscal notes with this. We're just putting one indeterminate fiscal note. Are we doing an indeterminate fiscal note for every agency that's entered a zero fiscal note because there's being a fiscal impact and a fiscal impact we may or may not expect?
Tim Holm, what was your intent?
Not sure I got all that. He speaks faster than I can say. My intent is that it should go to those, it should be an indeterminate fiscal note on every one of the potential of departments that would be. Had the possibility of an increment or decrement.
I think that comports with my understanding.
Sam Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, just a question of whether Representative Hawker's artfully stated definition is flying in the face of some other written definition that they've done since 1912 around here.
If it does, we'll find out. If it does, we'll find out. I think it sounded pretty good.
Thank you.
Is there any objection to that conceptual amendment that the clerk duly noted? Hearing none. Is there a maintained objection to moving the bill out of committee? Hearing none. House Bill 88 as amended with attached fiscal notes with special notes on them as passed out of committee. Did the co-chairman have any other business they wanted to be on the committee?
I don't think so. I think just to announce that there will be a House Finance meeting tomorrow.
There is going to be a House Finance Committee tomorrow, and I believe amendments to House Bill 66 and 67 are due in by 5 o'clock today. Is that what Mike would have said? Okay. Anything for the good of the order? We're adjourned. Okay, yeah.